I feel like it's not Boston, but it's his Boston debut that he's making. But you were close.
Do you want to do the Sports Centers, Jason?
I actually don't. You know, that's why when, you know, you were not starting on the show yet and Corey had left, that's why the interns did the Sports Centers.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because I don't want to do the Sports Centers.
I'm working too hard on these.
Plenty of time doing the Sports Centers, okay?
That's
done
true.
Plenty of Sports Centers in my life.
You've put in your Sports Center hours.
Thank you.
And it might literally hours, actually.
That's right, yes. All right, 913-912-4810. Let's continue talking some football, some Chiefs football. Joining us now, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, Matt Lane here in the zone with us. Matt, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We are doing just fine. I want to get your just general thoughts as we start here on camp so far, and then we'll sort of hone in and talk some more specifics. But your general thoughts a week into actual practices since last Wednesday was the first one.
I just like every year, this is the best team to ever exist, right?
Yes.
It's the singular best football team that's ever existed a week into camp now.
I love that everybody's in the best shape of their life, too. It's about time.
I'm like, what have they been doing the rest of their life? This is by far the best these guys have ever been in compared to any other camp year.
Everything has been a precursor to late July 2022 is the buildup to get to this point.
Well, except for they're also building up till next year.
Oh, that's a good point.
Keep that in mind too.
It's a never ending best shape of their life. That's a good point. You know what? I'm better today than I was yesterday. So today it's the best. There you go. It's a great point.
Exactly.
Man. So what have you seen? Or it feels like there's been a few players that have gotten a lot of the pub. Isaiah Pacheco, Sky Moore, Josh Williams. People love Karlaftis's motor. That seems to be the kind of takeaway and the feel and the general consensus of what we've seen from camp so far. You getting the same thing as to what you're hearing and reading and all of the awesome video clips at KC Sports Network on Twitter. If you're not following that, you're dumb. Because if you like the Chiefs and you want to see what's going on at practice with different video clips, KC Sports Network's Twitter feed. Are you looking at and hearing some of the same things and sort of takeaway some of the same things and storyline so far?
Yeah, pretty much. I think what you've gotten is a big emphasis on the rookie class, and I don't think it's purposeful by any specific person or anything like that, but the rookie class was supposed to be pretty big for the Chiefs this year. They had a lot of draft capital to work with. Everybody kind of collectively enjoyed the draft class, so it's of no surprise, but it seems like the majority of the hype, especially for, you know, the past couple days coming out of camp, have been all about those rookies. The thing that sticks with me the most, though, and it started from the very first day of camp, and I think it's still going, it's just the connection that Patrick Mahomes and Juju Smith-Schuster clearly already have, the trust that's already there with those two guys. It's something that I think we've talked about, just kind of how I thought people were maybe sleeping on how good Juju could be for this team going into the year, and then you get literally 1-2 days into camp. It's like, okay, it's very clear that he is going to have a big role on this team. It's like, I think that's kind of been put in the wayside as the rookies have kind of ramped up their performance, have they've gotten a little bit more shine. I don't think it should be kind of lost how good Juju had been those first couple days, and I still think he is now. I just think we're starting to go old name now. It's now an old name. We're now moving on to something new, and that's going to be Orlando Brown Jr.'s here. Carlos Dunlap's here. Here's all these rookies we haven't seen before. It's just that was the first thing that jumped out to me was how good Juju was right away and how much Mahomes seems to trust him, because some of those plays were just broken plays where he was tossing the ball up, and that's the one guy he kind of seemed to know where he was at on every single play.
Visiting with Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. So you go to the wide receivers first, and I want to go there as well with you, and that you and I agree on Juju Smith-Schuster. We had Kent on last week, Kent Swanson with the KC Sports Network and KC Laboratory Podcast. So we had him on last week, Matt, and when we talked with him, at that point, it had been Andy Reid had said, boy, his legs, he looks like a running back. Juju Smith-Schuster said, you know, Sky Moore, the way he runs, I mean, he breaks tackles like a running back. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, then that day before we had Kent on, said, well, you know, this offense is so versatile that I can go line up outside and 24 can get the ball in the backfield and a handoff. And like, all right, that's three guys now. Okay, there's three different guys that have mentioned him as a running back. And today, we see Sky Moore line up in the backfield and actually take a handoff from Patrick Mahomes. Kent and I talked about it, Matt, that last week, that it doesn't feel like it's just random when multiple people have mentioned that. And now we know that's not the case because he is actually lining up on plays in the backfield. This is not some, you know, state secret that they want to keep under wraps and embargo in like a, you know, a rookie mini camp or something like that. So what's your I guess, takeaway and view of Sky Moore that players have talked about him in that role? And now we're actually seeing him line up next to Patrick Mahomes and take the handoff.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely something to that now. Right? We've gotten, a lot of people have mentioned it. We've seen it actually show up at camp at this point in time. And you, I guess you kind of got to start working backwards and seeing where it may have come from. So it's easy to make the connection that maybe Andy Reid's, you know, taking a little bit from Kyle Shanahan's offense, which is something that Andy Reid often does, you know, taking good parts of other offenses around the entire sport of football and trying to incorporate it. But I was actually digging around just earlier today, back in when Tyreek Hill was a rookie, so 2016, and then the subsequent 2 years after that, all through those seasons, Tyreek Hill played over 35% of his snaps, that, or not percent, but 35 total snaps lined up in the backfield those first 3 years in the NFL. Maybe Sky Moore is going to get some kind of similar role to that early career Tyreek Hill, where he is spending, you know, 2, 3, 4 snaps a game coming out of the backfield, whether it is on an actual handoff, whether it's just running out into a route, just finding a way to get him on the field. I think that's something that we've all kind of seen. He's talented enough that the Chiefs got to find a way to put him on the field. But when you start looking at the Chiefs wide receiver room as a whole, and then the tight end room, and then some of the exciting players they have at running back, it might be hard to get him the full share of snaps that he probably could deserve, or that level of talent deserves, if you can find a way to sneak him into the backfield from time to time. And like I said, I'm sure the Deebo Samuel wide back aspect plays a little bit of a role here. But hopefully Andy has a plan for that. I think he does. That's enough mentions of it that I think there is some kind of, at bare minimum, package similar to what we saw from early career Tyreek Hill, where he'll be coming out of the backfield for certain sets.
And I wonder what Sky Moore would have looked like in that offense, because, you know, they talked about Tyreek early on that he was still learning the wide receiver position. So he was trying to learn routes, so he wasn't as skilled of a route runner as he eventually became. So in a way to get him the ball more, because as a wide receiver, it probably wouldn't have been as conducive because, as they said, he was still very raw and green in that. But you got to get him the ball somehow. So give him the ball in the backfield, whereas Sky Moore is not viewed that way. He's a guy who's played the wide receiver position, knows how to run routes and things like that. But you mentioned it, this may be more of a, yeah, but we got multiple guys. You know, we've got Juju that can do that, and MVS that can do that, and Mecole Hardman who can do that, and Sky Moore is the new guy. So he's clearly somebody they want to put the ball in his hands. You know, at the end of the year, Mecole Hardman in the playoffs got, what, more carries in the playoffs than he had all season long. So that was something that they were going to start incorporating a little bit more with him to put the ball in his hands different ways. And it certainly seems like that is the case for specifically Sky Moore, that the guy's not drafted to be sort of that underneath receiver, and he's so quick off the line of scrimmage, and he can run the quick slant, and he's very shifty in the open space, that it seems like a guy that doesn't have Tyreek's speed but has Tyreek's ability in terms of get the ball in his hands and let him go.
Yeah, and I think the big thing to remember with Sky Moore is that he was a running back in high school. That's the position that he played, and then he goes off to college and makes that transition to wide receiver, and it's kind of easy to forget because he is a very technical route runner. He looks really good running, and not even just basic routes, but it wasn't the widest route tree you're going to see out of any wide receiver coming out of college, but he looks really good doing that. He's very elusive off the line. He's explosive, but you just watch how he runs once he has the ball. It is very north-south. It's very putting his foot in the ground, getting upfield, and that's something that you probably attribute a little bit more to a running back than a wide receiver, which wide receivers, even the ones really good after the catch, usually like to square up defenders. They like to dance a little bit more to make guys miss. Sky Moore is a very north-south kind of guy with the ball in his hand. So it all makes sense when you look at his game, his physical makeup, and how he plays, that he is a guy that could do it. Like you had mentioned, Mecole Hardman, who got some carries last year, a lot of them were coming purely off the jet motion. Like, they did line him up as the Wildcat quarterback, and I do believe he actually got a handoff or two down the stretch, but most of his carries still came off that jet motion. I'm going to be really intrigued to see if the Chiefs are ready or willing to make a bigger package of this wide receiver in the backfield kind of thing. Is it something that's only going to show up once or twice a week, or is this something that you might get 5, 6, 7 plays out of every now and then, even if it's only one carry here and there? Will they go back to this package a little bit more frequently than they have in these past few seasons? They do think that would make a lot of sense. if they go the route of trying to run the ball a little bit more, trying to have a little bit heavier personnel. And when you have two tight ends in there, what way to make your team a little bit more dynamic than to put one of your better athletes in Sky Moore as your running back, and now all of a sudden you have a true receiver coming out of the backfield if you do go with play action or decide to throw the ball.
Yeah, and should point out, too, we've also seen Mecole Hardman in the Wildcat in training camp as well. So a continuation of what we saw with him at least once last year, that they, you know, still have that going on, and they've shown it in training camp with Mecole Hardman being that Wildcat quarterback. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Does this change an expectation or what you view the role may be for Sky Moore as an overall player in touches? Not the, well, yeah, I guess it would change the role if he's getting handoffs, that I didn't expect him to get handoffs in the backfield when they drafted him. But with Juju and MVS and Mecole Hardman, my big question was, I don't know what Sky Moore is going to look like. You know, I was asked that a number of times when training camp started with different shows of like, okay, Sky Moore, you know, what's it going to be? I don't know, but now that I hear and see that the Chiefs are finding ways to get him the ball, it does increase to me the expectation of what he may be in this offense. If this early on in training camp they're going, yeah, we got to put the ball in his hands some way, shape, or form.
I can really go either direction on this right now. Yes, it's good to see that they are trying to find ways to put the ball in his hands. But are they doing that because they don't have a clear path of how to use him directly as a wide receiver? Are they getting up, you know, putting their backs up against the wall a little bit, trying to figure out how to utilize him best as a receiver? So they're trying to find other ways to get the ball in his hand so that he can be a little impactful and, you know, make some kind of impact on the game? Or is it kind of like you're alluding to, he's just really been that good and that impressive that they're going to put the ball in his hands as many ways as they possibly can? So I still think right now I'm still falling back on the first half of the year might be a little slow for him. If there is this whole other package of plays where he's coming out of the backfield, I'm kind of excluding that for now just because that is such an unknown. I still think he, as a pure receiver, it's going to be slow to start the year, but based on everything we've seen, everything he put on field, they're on tape in college, the latter half of the year I really think is going to be big for him. Down the stretch, I think you're going to see him start to eat a little bit of snaps away from maybe it's a Hardman, maybe it's an MVS. Just, I think snaps will start going his way because the athleticism, the reliability with his ability to catch and get, you know, do some of the tough, dirty stuff a receiver's asked to do, I think is too immense. So down the stretch, I expect him to have a big final half of the year. I'm just really intrigued how they start the season and if they are giving him this wide-open playbook of receiver, halfback, wideback, whatever you want to call it, and just saying, hey, we're going to get you the ball because we need to get you on the field any way possible, and then where that kind of – how he parlays that into momentum to being the receiver that I think he will be in the NFL.
Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast, our guest here in the zone. Orlando Brown's in camp now. I guess what's your view of it now from the entirety, from the offseason to the agent to the negotiations to not signing – to then who knows how long the holdout was going to be, to then missing, you know, 4.5-5 total practices of training camp. What's your view of this whole thing from in its entirety to now its conclusion?
I think it goes back to the same thing. It's both sides were okay with him playing on the tag. I think him, quote-unquote, holding out from the beginning of training camp was something that he went ahead and let them know. I think the way the Chiefs went ahead and didn't really rotate at the left tackle spot, they just kept Roderick Johnson in there and didn't mess with the second team unit with the other four guys in the starting lineup. I think that was just something that everybody kind of knew was happening. So technically I get that he did hold or didn't hold out, but didn't show up to camp early. I think he let them know. I don't think anybody was actually upset by it. It doesn't seem like everyone's happy he's back. Was it mildly frustrating as a fan that he wasn't there? Sure, but the moment he says, okay, pads are coming on, I'm going to be here now because this is where I need to be ready for the season, two thumbs up. He gets paid a lot of money this year. The Chiefs are, you know, have him locked in for this year. It is what it is, and we'll do the whole song and dance next year, and hopefully they get something done a little bit earlier in the process. But at this point, kind of no harm, no foul, the way everything went down this season.
One of the things and parts on the offensive line, now that Orlando Brown is in camp, is the right tackle spot. Darian Kennard was drafted and a lot of hopes for, wow, he could be, you know, right tackle this year. Lucas Niang coming off the injury, who knew, you know, who knows how long he was going to be out. And Andrew Wiley, a guy who started at right tackle the last part of the season when he was installed there in the Green Bay game with the injuries that took place. And then he just simply was the right tackle the rest of the way. Albert Breer, in his observations from camp and his camp tour and talking with the front office and things like that, one of his observations was right tackle is the biggest question mark on the team right now, is the biggest question mark on the roster, is what he said. And that may be just observation. He's there for a day, so it's got to be more conversation with coaches and front office. Andrew Wiley talked today and had mentioned that all offseason it was a tackle, working and getting better at that, getting more comfortable, taking different, switching sets and things like that as a tackle instead of, as he said in the Super Bowl, he was a guard who was playing tackle. How good or what are your concerns maybe, since Albert Breer says that was the biggest question? What are your concerns at right tackle, and is there maybe a hope, which I have, at least some optimism, that if a guy, to me, performed pretty decent down the stretch, has now spent his entire offseason saying, this is my new position, and the Chiefs have said the same thing, I think there's a level of optimism that the improvement can continue to come for him at what is, quote-unquote, the weakest spot on the line.
Yeah, I thought that Breer's notion that the right tackle spot was kind of the biggest question mark of the team was interesting, because it doesn't seem like a question mark to me. It's Andrew Wiley's job, and listening to Andrew Wiley talk, he certainly at least seemed to feel like it was not locked in or anything, but seemed to feel like he was going to get every opportunity to earn this starting tackle job. And that's part, not why he came back to Kansas City, but that was at least something that he was got that notion during his negotiations. And while he made his decision to come back here, it seems like through OTAs, through camp, he's the starting right tackle. I don't even think he's lost any first-team reps to Kennard. I know Lucas Niang isn't back healthy yet, but it doesn't seem like anyone's even come remotely close to pushing or challenging Andrew Wiley, for this spot this season. So I don't know. I don't think it's a question mark on who's going to play there. I think it's Andrew Wiley right now. I like what Darian Kennard's shown early on in camp, but I don't think that he, from the little bits that we've seen, has proven to be better than Andrew Wiley, who has gotten to spend this last offseason being a tackle only, kind of planning on starting at the right tackle position. So I think he's going to be locked in to start. And looking around the NFL, Andrew Wiley may not be an all-pro level offensive tackle, but as your clear-cut fifth-best offensive lineman, a lot of teams are a lot worse off than the Chiefs are with Andrew Wiley. I think when you go about creating an entire offensive line unit, Andrew Wiley as being the fifth-best guy on that unit is really, really good in the grand scheme of things. So I just don't see it, I guess, quite as big of a question mark as maybe Breer was alluding to there, because I think Wiley's a solid tackle, maybe not quite average or above average, but he's solid. And when you have four other guys who are all above average or better playing with him, that makes the whole unit pretty good.
I went and looked at Pro Football Focus and down the stretch for Andrew Wiley when, he filled in. So he filled in the Green Bay game and moved to right tackle in week 9. So then he started week 10 and 11 against the Raiders and then the Dallas Cowboys. Then it was the bye week. And so maybe if I included everything, it might be different, but you can clearly see an improvement in the from the Green Bay game to then the Raiders to the Cowboys and then after the bye being much different. So I looked at it and said, okay, so if the bye, he can sort of sit back, catch his breath and say, okay, now I'm the right tackle. I was thrown in there and you're going through the week by week. Now we're there. The final 6 weeks of the season after the bye week for the Chiefs, week 13 through 18, there are 80 tackles overall that qualified in terms of snaps played. 80 tackles, both right and left tackle. He ranked 19th overall out of the 80 tackles in the final 6 weeks of the season. I was shocked by that, to be honest with you, that he had that high of a ranking in just those final 6 weeks. Now, maybe it turns out to be cherry picking and you go, yeah, remember that 6 week stretch for Andrew Wiley when he was actually good? I hope that's not the conversation this year. But if that's him getting more and more acclimated to right tackle and then spending an entire offseason doing that, I'm pretty encouraged by, those numbers. People like Pro Football Focus. Some people don't. Who knows? But out of the 80 tackles, he was 19th.
It I think anticipating Andrew Wiley to remain being, you know, the 19th
I don't anticipate that. That's not what I'm saying.
Right. I get you. I just say, like, anticipating that would certainly be, I think, overhyping or setting yourself up for failure. But what that does go to show and what you're kind of pointing at here is he was not a problem. He was, if anything, he was actually good. Like, he was not a problem in any meaning of the word or the phrase last year down the stretch. And, again, if this is a guy that is very clearly, you know, the fifth best offensive lineman on your team, that's a good thing. I think the rest of the NFL showed you a little bit what they thought of him when he essentially signed a relatively a guy that played that well down the stretch as offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. No other team in the NFL wanted to pay him even, you know, bad starter money.
Yeah.
The Chiefs were able to get him back on a deal. I think that does matter a little bit, but at the same time, he's coming back to the exact same system with the same four guys he played next to. He's going to have all the same tight ends next to him, the same quarterback. Like, so many things are remaining constant that his play, you would assume, would only tend to grow from there. And then let's say there is some natural regression. That's fine. You said there, PFF, whatever you want to think of that. But even if we just say he's roughly a top 25 total offensive tackle down the stretch last year, even accounting for some regression, you got a long way to fall before he's outside of being an average level starting offensive tackle here. And that's all the Chiefs really need from that right tackle position. So I don't particularly have any concerns by it. I think if somebody like Niang comes back and is healthy, or if Kennard can prove to be better in camp and take that job, that's awesome. Two thumbs up. I think Wiley's a very good benchmark for this team, so I have no concerns there.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, if Wiley was just a train wreck last year and it was just awful, and it was like, who was it that when Fisher went down in 2019 and Mahomes had him at left tackle?
Cam Irving.
Yeah, Cam Irving. If it was Cam Irving at right tackle and you're like, good God, if Kennard wins the job, you're like, yeah, because really anybody with a pulse should be able to win that job over him. That wasn't the case, right? Because he was good down the stretch. So if Kennard is the right tackle and it's all health, that's great, you know, because that showed that he, you know, beat out somebody who had played right tackle in the NFL and spent all offseason, you know, working on that as well. But it's a good point, though, that even with those numbers, teams were like, yeah, we're going to, you know, recruit you as a tackle in the free agent market, but we're not going to give you money to where we think you're ready to then take those next steps. We'll take a flyer on you as a tackle. And at that point, he's like, well, I'll just stay with the Chiefs where I can be that guy. So we'll see. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. One of the other storylines, Matt, is how skinny Frank Clark is, he's lost some weight and he's, you know, he's in the best shape of his life, but the physique and things like that. Are your expectations changed at all when you see Frank Clark and you hear him talk about how embarrassed he was last year? He had a gut. He was slow. He had a rough year because of what he said. He brought it on himself with things that were happening off the field. He found out that liquor was actually causing some of his nutrition and his stomach issues, and he cut that out and red meat. Are your expectations changed and maybe a little more excitement around Frank Clark?
I don't know. I've been quite the defender and fan, and I don't want to say making excuses, but at least seeing Frank Clark as a glass half full kind of situation since the Chiefs got him. I think he got unfairly criticized his first year with the Chiefs and was really good down the stretch, but people focused on when he was playing through injuries to start the year. Since then, though, things have steadily decreased. He has steadily been worse and worse almost every single season since the Chiefs acquired him, and that's not a good sign. And like, finally this year, I was ready to finally be on the bandwagon of, I think it's time that he has to transition to a role player. He, as good as he is as a run defender, he just doesn't need to be on the field as a pass rusher very often anymore. And so I'm sitting there, I'm thinking that all offseason, we get to camp, I'm still thinking it. And then he comes out and he doesn't look small. 2 years ago, he looked small. He looked skinny. He looked emaciated when you saw pictures of him. He doesn't look necessarily small now, but he looks like he is, as you said, in the best shape of his life. He looks lean, I would say. He's still, you know, got good size in his lower body. He just looks a little bit leaner. And then he's moving what looks to be relatively well. You hear Steve Spagnuolo talk about him being in a little bit better shape, you know, from his own perspective. And it's hard to not let that positivity over Frank Clark creep back in. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, this year I am trying to dull it down. I'm trying to keep it down because I have been hurt, you know, 3 straight seasons now saying, nope, this is a bounce back. The Chiefs are finally about to get some version of the Seattle Seahawks Frank Clark. They're about to get some version of, you know, that Super Bowl run Frank Clark. and they haven't got back there. I would be a little surprised if they got that this year, but to say that I kind of don't expect him to be better than last year would be a lie, because last year he wasn't good. He looks like he should be better this year, and the Chiefs could really use that to go along with the Carlos Dunlap and then the rookie George Karloff.
Maybe it would just be natural that you would see this, but I also get encouraged by, you know, you hear the buy-in in the offseason. Andy Reid talked to him and said, you're a better player than this, man. What's going on? And he said he needed that conversation. It sort of changed things for him moving forward. So that part of it, but maybe it's something he would have done anyway, but it might be looking at it glass half full as well. But his work with Karloftis after pretty much every single practice, to me, is another data point of what feels like a more overall buy-in and commitment this year from Frank Clark to the team, to himself, to what his impact on the overall season could be, in that he's now taken Karloftis under his wing and tried to help him out as much as possible, rather than just simply being a guy that, well, practice is over, I've been in the league a long time, see you guys, George, I hope you do well this year, you know, good for you, but it's, this is what's best for the team, therefore I'm going to stay after every practice and work with Karloftis.
I do think Frank Clark has always been pretty good about working with younger guys. I think I remember Mike Dana and even Taco Charlton, when he got here, kind of all saying similar things, is that, you know, Frank Clark was a guy that they could learn from. But yeah, it seems like he's taken it to another level this year. He's never shied away from having a little bit of a leadership role, but this year it seems like it's transitioned, I guess, from a on-the-field leader to more of an on-the-field extra coach kind of thing. Like, he's kind of taken over a little bit of a coaching-type role for some of these young guys, and that is good to see, because people do seem to forget, and it's fun to make jokes about, but Frank Clark, during his, you know, rookie contract run with the Seahawks, he wasn't, the Bosa's level, he wasn't Myles Garrett level, but Khalil Mack, he was, like, one half step down from that. That's how productive he was with Seattle, and that was even spending some time as just a designated pass rusher for them. He was just that productive. So he knows what he's doing. He knows functionally how to be a good NFL pass rusher. Sharing that with some younger guys and some other guys is definitely something you want to see. And, or it could just be a last-ditch effort to, you know,
yeah,
I got to go out on the highest note possible so I get paid again. Like, yeah, there is, that is always a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, it would be humongous for this team if Frank Clark has a bounce back year. So it would be all the difference in the world it could be for this defense and this overall team. So we'll see. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Matt, great stuff as always, man. Very much appreciate the time. We'll talk in a few weeks as we'll be getting closer and closer to the regular season. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Awesome. Thanks for having me guys.
Absolutely. There's Matt Lane. Great stuff, man. Go check out KC Sports Network, and the KC Laboratory Podcast is awesome as well. And, of course, the Twitter handle and the tweets for KC Sports Network, because they have lots of videos of what they're seeing at camp. And those videos is where today we see Sky Moore lined up in the backfield. Videos of where we see Mecole Hardman and the Wildcat formation a couple of times so far. The videos in where we see Willie Gay shooting through the line and tackling whoever it was in the backfield. We see Leo Chanel coming down and laying a big hit on Ronald Jones. We see Josh Williams in there. That's all in their Twitter account with all these different videos. So it's definitely well worth it for you to go and check that out. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling more zone right after this. We got Sports or Leisure coming up at 1 o'clock, as we'll be giving away $25 to Johnny's Tavern. We also have a pair of tickets to the 100-year celebration that we're going to give away a couple of different ways, one of those being on the video stream as well, that Briscoe and Beards have been putting their heads together constantly throughout this entire show of figuring out what they're going to do with that. The brainstorming that's been going on, just noodling on this whole thing, has been crazy.
You had it right the first time. We've just been bashing our heads together for the last 30 minutes or so. I am extremely dizzy and might not be able to be here for the next half hour, so just got to rehydrate.
Makes sense.
I'm going to go lay in a dark room, just like a shed, I think, right? Was that the...
Who's Mike fault? Leach?
Was that Mike Leach? I didn't want to say it was Mike Leach, because I couldn't remember sure if it was Mike Leach. He's kind of had a pretty good PR recovery tour since then, huh?
Not
just
bad.
Just be kind of quirky and weird, and we'll forget about the whole concussion shed thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Beard, just go ahead and head over to the concussion shed whenever you're ready.
Please. Thank you.
Was it chair graveyard?
No, it's the concussion shed.
It's a specific shed for concussions. That's where they put them. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. The NFL has appealed the decision from Judge Sue Robinson with Deshaun Watson. We can get into a little bit more of that that we started off the show talking about, but then immediately cut off by the press conferences there with the Chiefs in St. Joe. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I thought we were taking shots at Anderson, man.
You're right. Let's get back on track.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Little Sports or Leisure, presented by Johnny's Tavern. Thank you to Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. We heard from the Chiefs earlier in the day. Steve Spagnuolo, Andrew Wiley, Sky Moore, and Carlos Dunlap all talking today. Cliff notes of that, Carlos Dunlap, one of the reasons he signed with the Chiefs was that the opportunity to play every down, not be a pass rushing specialist. Andrew Wiley spent all of the offseason working at tackle. Teams talked to him about signing as specifically a tackle, and the Chiefs signed him as a tackle as well, not a guard. So he has officially moved positions. We know that with him starting at right tackle in camp so far, but this is now your position in your career. So that was certainly interesting as well. And a few other nuggets from the press conferences that you can hear in their entirety in the first hour of the podcast of the show today, since the first hour of the podcast was an actual hour. Because we had no commercial breaks in that. We were getting ready to go to our first commercial break when all of a sudden Beards was like, Spags, Spags.
That is how he does it. He just sort of just
That's how
shouts.
He says. Yeah, like, well, we'll take a timeout, Spags.
It's always right, either Beards. It's always either Spags or this is either Carlos Dunlap, Sky Moore, or Andrew Wiley. It's like, man, you should be able to eliminate at least a couple of those, man.
I don't know who this is. He's 6'5". And he's a defensive player.
This is either Chris Jones, Patrick Mahomes, or Garrett Dieter. He's not even on the roster. He's retired. Beards, pay attention.
But it kind of looks like him a little bit, so I don't want to rule him out. Right, he's not on the list to talk.
We've either got Frank Clark, Orlando Brown, or George Karloftis. Beards, come on, man.
This is either Andy Reid or Eric Bieniemy.
Look
I'm
at
not
the screen.
Sure which one is talking, but let's just send it out there to our coach. Spags! It's Spags.
It is all we always know when it's Spags. That's true. I think there's a better chance. Beards, tell me if I'm wrong. I think you're
The horn. I guess I'm done,
the
right?
The horn. What time the is horn. It? Good afternoon, good evening, good night.
Good evening, everybody.
I think that if you had to no scope it, like you know how like there's the Wordle spinoff, I think it's called Hurdle, where it plays a second of a song, and you put in a guess. Then it plays 2 seconds of the song, and you can put in your guess.
Okay, cool.
I think Spags might be the one that you would get the most quickly every time, because it's just, hey, how y'all doing? Like, you get 1 second, a full sentence, and it sounds like Spags.
I mean, probably him, Reed, or Mahomes are the easy ones.
Just by
voice.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, obviously. Because it's just like, okay, you get three words... of the person's first answer.
Yeah.
The three words of a person's first answer, and that's all you can go off of. Mahomes would be the easiest because every time it's, what? Yeah, obviously.
And for Andy Reid, it's always kind of a, all right. That's Coach.
Yeah.
Coach Reid. That's Big Red.
Doggone it, Herbie. Yeah. And Eric Bieniemy is the little laugh.
That's good.
I'll tell you what.
I will say this.
The way he plays, I will say this. He's a hell of a player. That guy is a heck of a player.
Sometimes it's a heck day. Sometimes it's a hell day. Not really. I think that's a good window into how the practice has gone.
All right, 913-912-4810. So we started off in talking about the bigger news around the NFL, and that is the NFL has filed its appeal. And they had till, 3 days. So they had today to when they needed to officially file the appeal. They have done that now. And we will see what the next steps are for the union and for Deshaun Watson. The expectation is that there will be a lawsuit that will be brought towards the NFL from Deshaun Watson, whether that's the union or just simply his lawyers, his camp. We've heard Adam Schefter and Jeff Chedid and others have weighed in and said, look, Deshaun Watson's suspended. So week one, he's not going to be playing. He's suspended for the first 6 weeks of the season. And, my question with that was, we saw Tom Brady get to play because there was the injunction. We saw Ezekiel Elliott get to play. There was the stay of the suspension and the injunction while the appeals process was going on. And this one doesn't seem like that's being discussed, that it's just he's suspended for six games while the appeal is going on. And the only thing I can make out from that is that this is not an appeal to lessen the games from six down to four or two or none at all. It's an appeal for the NFL to make the suspension even longer. So therefore, what's the injunction or the stay? It doesn't mean that they won't. It doesn't mean that the union or Deshaun Watson's camp won't ask for there to be, while the appeal is going on, to not have to serve the suspension. It wouldn't make sense from my standpoint, because that is just delaying how many games into the season you're going to be. So if you play the first 3 weeks, well, then you're going to serve that six-game suspension, even if the appeal is denied from Roger Goodell, which would be odd for that to be the case. You're still going to have to serve at least six games. So a couple of texters had texted in and said an attorney had weighed in online about the whole thing. And it said that starting from week seven would be sort of like that stay or something, yeah, to where it's just sort of paused, where he would then be playing, but the appeal and everything would be on pause. And then if it's longer than that, then he would have to serve that later. Or if the NFL has said, actually, we're going to take this six games and we're going to make this an entire year, then he could get the stay and the injunction until the overall lawsuit is done. And if it's an indefinite for at least a year, I'm wondering what that then equals to from the six games, because it wouldn't just be 12 more, because he would be suspended for the postseason as well this year. So it wouldn't be six this year and then 12 next year if you're looking for an entire season. That's where I think it would get interesting and sort of muddy the waters, is if he plays like 3 weeks before everything gets, he plays week 7, 8, and 9 before everything gets figured out, and then the NFL wins in court and he is suspended for a year. So then he goes back to being suspended for a year, except he would have played 3 weeks this year. Like, the whole thing is just going to be kind of muddy along the way. But I think the NFL made the right decision in doing that and not just simply saying, oh, we want to get past it. Judge Sue Robinson made her decision. This is what we agreed to. And so we're just going to move on, because we don't want this whole thing hanging around for 600 plus days like it did with Deflategate.
Right, and if it's going to hang around, it needs to hang around publicly because of the fact that the NFL is trying to reach a stronger punishment as opposed to trying to get phone records out and try to cut an 8-game suspension to 4 or a 6-2 or any of those things, mm-hmm, that always seem to get into the, you know, into the minds of NFL fans as you're trying to navigate all of this. I just don't think there's any world in which this could have just stayed at 6 games and the NFL would have been able to shrug off any of the responsibility there. Once it became common knowledge that how this process would work, which is, again, Judge Robinson gave her recommendation and her logic and confirmed that these accusations were true. Like, that is something in the work she did. The part of it that's collectively bargained, like I mentioned this morning, the part of this collectively bargained now also is that either side could then go on and object to that or appeal either the NFLPA or the ownership or league side. The NFLPA said they weren't going to do that before the actual 6-game suspension had been announced, because they knew it was going to be, mm-hmm, something they were happy with. So now the facts are agreed upon. The length of the suspension is the question. To your question, the NFL is going to have to hand down what they want to do within the next month. This is not going to be a thing where the NFL doesn't have their additional suspension for the start of the regular season. They'll have to get that figured out by then. At that point, once Watson is serving the suspension for the first 6 games, like you said earlier, if you get to week 7 and this is still up in the air, you could see some tension. If you're the NFL, you could say, this is our right to do this. Mm-hmm. This is something we've already agreed upon. Roger Goodell could suspend him for a year like he suspended Calvin Ridley. And I don't know that they would have NFLPA ground to stand on, if that makes sense. Legally, perhaps, but the NFL's not going, there's no way the NFL, knock on wood, fingers crossed, the NFL proves me wrong on this stuff all the time. There's no way that the NFL could say, hey, you know what? While this goes through the courts, we will actually forego some of our own powers. You can be out there and play along,
nope,
and we'll continue to fight this in the courts. the best thing they can do is get Deshaun Watson off everybody's screen for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time next year comes around, they can at least say, hey, we gave this guy, it also sounds like the monetary aspect is a big deal in the NFL's eyes. They can say, hey, we have given Deshaun Watson the largest personal conduct suspension in the history of the sport. We just couldn't do any more than that within reason, since he's not literally in prison. And then it becomes about the Browns being the team willing to be his new organization and all of the things that come with that. But the Browns have already obviously shown they're not worried about that part of it.
So to clarify, from the actual game of Deflategate to when he served a suspension was over 600 days. Punishment to suspension was 488 games. So when Roger Goodell in the NFL said, Tom Brady, you're suspended 4 games, and then appeals in court and all of that stuff, 488 days later is when he actually served that 4-game suspension. The first reaction from a lot of people was like, wow, she's got this thing pretty buttoned up. She's using Roger Goodell's own words against him, and she's doing this as, you know, a judge to then eliminate the possibility of appeal, to make sure that this is ironclad, because you don't want to give out your opinion and your ruling and then have it be open to appeal and all this. But you knew when it was 6 games that there was no way the NFL was going to go for that. They wanted a full year, and they wanted a requirement that Deshaun Watson had to apply for reinstatement to the NFL. Not just it's a suspension and after the games are up, you're good to go. You have to then apply to be reinstated by the NFL, which is what they want as a part of the suspension and the punishment.
Which logically makes a lot of sense for a serial offender who, yes, as far as we can tell, was just doing this forever until, right, eventually someone said, what are you doing?
Which is why it's such an absurd ruling that she calls him a first-time offender.
There are some different parts of it you could pick apart from her ruling. That's the one that stuck with me he's not a first-time offender. He's a first-time being caught.
He's a first-time defendant.
Right, yes, correct.
He's not a first-time offender. He's a first-time defendant.
Yes, this he's a serial offender and a first-time defendant.
This person robbed 30 banks, and we found him on the 31st. Yeah, yes. But he's a first-time offender, though.
How do you treat him as a first-time defender?
It's not. There were 24 women. He reached out to 66.
Serial killers are very rarely anything other than first-time offenders, because once you find them the one time, then you realize, hey, well, you got 6 or 7 back here.
That's exactly right. They typically don't get out of jail to then be a serial killer again.
Right. That, yeah, I imagine, is probably pretty rare. They are punished despite being a first-time defendant.
Yeah. And I think where the NFL has grounds to appeal is that this 6 games, for whatever reason, was stuck in her head with the violent versus nonviolent. And she said the players handling in respect to women, the 6 games, that the nonviolence was 3 games. And so she doubled that because this was extraordinary and the most egregious case the NFL has ever seen. And she said it was predatory behavior. And so she went up to 6 games because it's 6 games is the minimum for the violent acts in the NFL, but nowhere in there does it say nonviolent is up to a 6-game suspension. It's just that the violent starts at a 6-game suspension, but it doesn't mean that if it's nonviolent, which, by the way, whatever definition you want to come up with, it's kind of difficult to do that, but even by her own standards of this is nonviolent, it doesn't say that you can only be suspended for 6 games. Like, that whole 6-game thing is where I think the NFL has real grounds to appeal, because there is no wording about, well, it's only 6 games for this and you can't go more than 6 games. No. The only reason it's 6 games is because that was installed as the minimum for a violent offense.
If I was going to give her as much credit as possible here, I would say that she was looking for precedent to inform her decision. That makes sense. You're a judge trying to work on a suspension. If this was some case that was more run of the mill, you would want the judge to look for precedent. But she was looking for precedent in a case that has none.
Yeah.
The NFL does not have precedent for a situation like this. Not just the crimes and the accusations, but also the context of the accused, the contract he just got, the quarterback position. Those things all matter to the NFL.
Also, if you're going by precedent and you're going the 6 games because of in the CBA, she already proved that she's willing to go above and beyond that, because she is requiring him to only receive massage therapy sessions within team structures, and those team massage therapists that he cannot go outside the team.
So there's no precedent outside, for that.
There's nothing in the CBA that says, if you're caught doing this and this. And I loved what Mitchell Schwartz said, which by the way, I'm not sure how you then would be able to investigate that or guard whatever it might be to follow that. I love what Mitchell Schwartz said when she was saying that you can't then go after the fact once somebody is caught to then say, well, now we're going to increase the suspension here or there or there. Because, you know, had he known that this, and Mitchell Schwartz was like, you really think that if Deshaun Watson in the CBA somewhere, it said you get a year for this, he would have then just stopped doing it because there was a chance. He's like, there's not an NFL player in the world that thinks had they been doing that, they probably weren't going to have at least a year suspension if they were caught doing that.
And
it's just amazing
that you don't owe there. I can't remember what the specific word was in the report, but it was basically a heads up. It was some sort of, hey, yeah. Again, going back to the precedent, it would be unfair to deliver a suspension unlike any of the NFL's ever seen for actions when that was never put in writing. There have always, at least there's supposed to always be consequences for systemic sexual assault, for being a serial sexual offender. Sort of societally speaking, that generally, hopefully, ideally comes with consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you want to argue the behavior deserves a more severe penalty, but it's not in your policy. You can't just make the policy to support one specific case as it's going on. Therefore, here's the ruling. So I think he's ultimately, I think Roger Goodell is going to come back, and even whoever he designates to be the person that hears the appeal, even if it's not him, will designate somebody that's like, hey, you know.
We're on the same page here, right?
Yeah, it's a year-long suspension, and he has to apply for reinstatement when it's over. We'll see what happens. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up this hour, and then we'll have some fun. Sports or Leisure coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
It's hot out
here. Okay.
My knee pits are sweating. I'd love a little breeze on them.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so Sports or Leisure coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. The quote you were thinking of, I found it. It says, quote, it is inherently unfair to identify conduct as prohibited only after the conduct has been committed, just as it is inherently unjust to change the penalties for such conduct after the fact.
Do you think the NFL and the CBA has a penalty for cannibalism? I'm just curious. Do you think that's been written out already?
I haven't read it in its entirety.
Me neither. I'm going to go Control F and search for cannibal.
I'm going to guess no.
Probably not. So six games? Where's the line?
Yeah, but
that's ridiculous.
Cannibalism
of course.
Is
the line, though?
But that seems to be violent.
That, well?
Unless, is it violent after the fact? Like, did you render this person dead so then you can cannibalize? Or did you find them that way?
I mean, Jason, I'm not a judge, so what do I know?
We might have some Aaron Judge questions in Sports Illusion. 913-3810-810.
That's bad.